This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. In the studio with me right now is
Frida Liu.
We are going to be talking about valuation today, particularly how to find your startup's valuation. What is valuation? How important is it to a startup? And how exactly do you calculate it? An important set of questions, obviously, to answer for any entrepreneur, especially those looking to entice external investors or to shoot for an IPO in the future. We're going to be hearing a little bit later on from Kevin Brockland. He is the Managing Director at Indelible Ventures. So, first of all, let's ask a few questions. What exactly is what exactly is valuation? So, a startup's valuation denotes what it is worth at a given point in time. And factors that make up the valuation include things like the development stage of the product or the service, proof of concept in its market, the CEO and their team, valuation of peers or similar startups, existing strategic relationships and customers, and sales. Right. Now, while there's no exact science for figuring out how much money you'll need down the road, certain sectors and industries have patterns you can look for. Entrepreneurs typically value their startup when raising capital or while giving shares to their team, board members, and advisors. Having an accurate valuation of your startup is critical because if you overvalue it, investors likely won't give you any money. On the other hand, undervaluing your startup means you're giving up a lot of equity for a lot less money, or you're undervaluing what you've built so far.
Right. So sadly, there isn't a straightforward formula to follow when valuing your startup, because most startups can't really prove their commercial success at a large scale. Valuations take into account the nature of the product or service, projections for the business and the total addressable market, or what they call TAM, T-A-M. You may have heard the valuation is more of an art than science, and it's often true. Startups often don't have enough concrete data at the early stage and face a range of risk factors that could change the course of the business. Many traditional valuation methods such as discounted cash flow aren't as useful for valuing early stage startups, and this means investors have to gauge other factors that aren't so easily measured.
Right. So where do you even begin if you're curious about valuing your startup? And according to TechCrunch, as a founder, your job is to showcase the potential for value creation and how you'll do it, the opportunity for an attractive return on an investment, your ability to mitigate risk factors. The art of valuing a company often involves determining the qualitative value of certain factors, and primarily amongst these are the nature of the product or the service, the TAM, which you mentioned earlier on, Frida, evaluation of the team in terms of talent and fit, go-to-market strategies, projected forecasts, and potential exit opportunities. Right. And the value of each factor will be different based on the industry and what a company does. And it's crucial to balance your evaluation of the first few years' forecast with the sector you operate in and what your product or service is.
And this all sounds a little complicated, and it can be tough to determine all of these factors yourself. So instead of trying to figure out all these factors by yourself, speak with experts, independent advisors, lawyers, investors who are experienced performing valuations. Also, the earliest valuation rounds are usually the most challenging. Later, you'll be able to tap into the many stakeholders on your team for guidance. So there are also pre-existing ideas like the Berkus method that can get you started on your valuation calculation as well.
Let's talk a little bit about VCs then. So they're also frequently used the comparable transactions and venture capital methods to arrive at these valuations. These are similar in that they both involve asking, you know, how much are companies like these acquired for? In the comparable transactions approach, you'll consider deals involving companies in your industry that are similar in size to yours. And when researching your market, you should look for the revenue multiples or earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. EBITDA. You've probably heard this quite a bit. Multiples of some similar companies in your sector. Any method of calculating your valuation will obviously involve a lot of maths, but despite all the maths involved, your valuation also has drivers you have no control over, like market conditions, where your investors are located, and the value of other comparable startups. Often a company will get a higher valuation when the economy is booming than it would during a severe recession. And ultimately, you finalize your startup's valuation by negotiating with investors.
Right. It's also important that you remember that investors want to work with you. They want you and your team to be extremely motivated, as this ensures everyone gets an attractive return. If investors own 90% of a company, you won't be happy with your share of the returns. Conversely, if you don't give up some equity, you'll have a hard time raising funds. So when approaching investors, be transparent and realistic about future funding rounds and communicate all information to your investors. Mm-hmm. Your current round is likely part of several, you know, funding rounds, you know, Series A, Series B, Series C, in which each valuation you get will be progressively higher.
Yeah. And remember, what your business is worth today is based on the potential value you'll generate at the exit. So early stage investors balance the high risk of failure with your company's potential to provide an attractive exit. This means your exit value could be more than 10 times your value at the moment they invest. Mm-hmm. Investors carefully consider the balance of risk and reward for each prospective investment opportunity. They need good returns and successes to make up for the investments that will inevitably fail. An investor's portfolio often looks like this. Mm. Two companies are outstanding. They may return 10 times or more. Three could do fairly well, 3 to 4 times the investment. And two may return the amount invested, and three might fail.
Okay, so you're just wondering which three,
yeah.
Which three did I pick on? Was it the last three that failed? So investors also want to know what the investment will look like in 5 to 7 years if you achieve your goal. So investors' returns will be diluted by the rounds you raise in the future. So they factor these projected lower returns into the assessment of the numbers you give them. And while there's no exact science of figuring out how much money you'll need down the road, certain sectors and industries have patterns you can look for. So it's worth it to do a little research. The likelihood of a successful exit depends on the ability to show your company's potential for creating future value and how you'll mitigate the risk of failure. So all in all, investors are more likely to accept your proposed valuation if you do the research and build a practical argument based on industry accepted practices with sensible metrics from sample exits in your industry.
Right. Now, for more on this topic and from an investor's point of view, we will be speaking to Kevin Brockland after the break. Mm. He's the managing partner at Seed Stage Venture Fund, Indelible Ventures. That's all coming up after the break.
Okay.
We've got some music to take us there. Smokey Robinson and The Miracles with What About Me here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9.
Bring forth Malaysia. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's myself, Rich Bradbury, and
Frida Liu.
We're trying to break down how to find your startup's valuation today. What is valuation? How important is it to a startup, and how do you calculate it? An important set of questions, of course, that we've been discussing so far. A startup's valuation denotes what it's worth at a given point in time, made up from a bunch of factors. We've tried to break it down a little bit so we kind of understand it, but we have somebody on the line with us who's going to help us out a little bit more. It is Kevin Brockland. But before we get to Kevin, if you have anything you want to query us about, ask us about, get us on WhatsApp. 018-789-8899 is the number to get us via WhatsApp. And on Twitter, of course, we are at BFM Radio. As I mentioned, we've got Kevin Brockland. He is the managing partner over Indelible Ventures. So, Kevin, when do you think a startup should look at the possibility of valuation?
There's really three scenarios where a startup should look at their valuation. One is when allocating ESOP shares to employees or potentially a senior hire and so forth, so that you can properly value those shares that you're allocating to that individual or those individuals. Another one is if you're actually going out to market and trying to raise funding. If you're raising funding, you need to know what the value of your company is, so you know what type of percent ownership that you will be giving up as a result of raising capital. The last scenario is if in a potential scenario where there's an acquirer that actually wants to buy out or buy a large interest in the company. In doing so, you need to know, well, how much do they need to pay for that percent? What's my valuation? How much is my company worth if they're coming in and trying to acquire? All three of those scenarios require that you understand what the value of the company overall is and go through the exercise in order to root that in some logic.
Right. Kevin, is valuation relevant even if a startup isn't looking to raise capital or, you know, to start their IPO journey?
It is relevant. I think there's certain circumstances where it is relevant. If you're allocating shares as an incentive for a senior hire, or if you're allocating shares to employees to as a bonus or a reward, or those sort of scenarios require you to understand what the value of the company is, so you understand what the value of the individual shares are that you would be allocating to those individuals. And there's also the scenario where you're in conversations to get acquired otherwise. If those scenarios don't apply, you should focus on your business. You should have an understanding within the market, but it's not something that should be a time-consuming distraction for you. Focus on building the business.
And for those startups that are in their nascent stage, is it possible to calculate valuation when there might not even be a product yet?
Pre-revenue, it's possible. Pre-product, it becomes quite difficult to actually put a value on it. There's methodologies out there, such as scorecard methods. I think the most famous of them is the Berkus method, which essentially takes five characteristics and sets what like a cap of the valuation would be. That being said, that one was created based upon US metrics. It doesn't really apply to the values that are going on out there. So it's not really always market appropriate, but you would be going much more off of the perceived value of the team and the potential to create a product, the R&D, the intellectual property, etc. It is possible. It just becomes significantly more art than science.
So how does a startup calculate the evaluation?
There's a number of mathematical approaches to it that anyone that's gone through business school or finance education likely has seen in regards to discounted cash flow, which is getting the present value of future cash flows. There's the first Chicago method, which is similar to the discounted cash flow, but you basically project out into the future of some sort of trigger event, 3, 5, however many years out, and then you discount that, the value that you would be at that day, back to the present. There's several different methodologies. I think the one that you should always look at as well is looking at what market comparables are. What are other companies that are comparable to you being valued at? And then use those and then adjust them based upon the specific characteristics of, you know, what's the size of your addressable market relative to that comparable? What's your growth rate? What's your margins? Your unit economics. Those differential characteristics are things that will end up adjusting it. There's not necessarily a single value, but those will give you a basis into what are things going at today. I would caution that geography does play a big factor in it, primarily associated with what the addressable market is. A company in the US is going to be valued at a significantly larger multiple, generally speaking, than a company in other countries. So I want to caution that looking at those market multiples of a company in another market doesn't necessarily mean that you will be able to get those same valuations. But there's a lot of additional considerations beyond the math that require some subjective analysis and logic as to why you would end up adjusting those formulas one direction or another. If you're growing 2 times as fast as a comparable company with much better margin, a much better market access, much better product, much larger addressable market, so on and so forth, yeah, maybe you can say that instead of a multiple of X, you can be a multiple higher than that. But it has to have some basis in logic.
Okay, interesting stuff. Just before we take a break then, Kevin, how can a startup tell if they're under or overestimated their valuation?
Well, if you're in conversations with an investor and they eagerly jump at your valuation without even attempting to negotiate it, you've probably underestimated your valuation. That's the easiest possibility. But generally speaking, I think a key aspect is just looking out into the market and seeing what other companies are going for and being able to root what your own assessment of your valuation is based upon those considerations. Again, you needed to adjust those for the specific differences, because there's no company that will be 100% comparable. You don't have the same market size, you don't have the same growth rates, you don't have the same margin. So there is some adjustments there. I think the main way to tell on the over and under and overestimation is really if they are extremely underestimated or extremely overestimated. Valuation is really range based, because you can talk to 10 different investors and they'll put 10 different values on there. And what you're trying to do is just find a, when you're actually raising or otherwise, you're trying to find a point estimate within that range. And really only if you're extremely outside of those bounds and there's not really a strong logic that you can attach to why, that's when you know if you're under or overestimated.
Great. Okay, stay on the line with us, Kevin. We're going to take a short break here, but I want to ask, you know, if you mess up your calculation, you know, what kind of consequences there might be. Ups is not good enough. Of course, we are on the phone with Kevin Brockland. He is the managing partner over at Indelible Ventures. We're going to take a short break. We've got some music from the Lars and Better Than Ezra here on Enterprise Biz Bytes. We'll be right back in a few minutes here on BFM 89.9.
Beats, funk, mixtapes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. I'm Rich Bradbury in the studio with
Frida Liu.
We're speaking about how to find your startup's valuation. What is valuation? How important it is to a startup, and how do you calculate it? If you have any questions for us, get us via WhatsApp 018-789-8899. Twitter, we're at BFM Radio. We've got Kevin with us on the line, who we'll get back to in a minute. Frida, you wanted to pick something up though about.
It's just a conversation I had with someone who does investing. Says sometimes it's the simplicity of good idea, good leader, right? And so that's a win, right? Good leader, bad idea. And then, of course, bad idea, bad leader, that's a given. But what happens when you've got a good leader but a bad idea? Because perhaps that person, I'm just going to put out there, Anthony Tan from Grab, right? He comes up with a new business idea. It's like, can he go wrong, right? I mean, that kind of thing. And is he then seeing something we can't see, right? So is it really a bad idea? Do you lose your... independence? Do you then lose your objectivity because you've got someone who's got a track record? I mean, an example of, you know, the WeWork story.
Yeah, I mean, we've spoken to investors and VCs and whatever, and a lot of their discussion and a lot of the way in which they decide on which companies to pick and choose is not necessarily on the good idea. It's that leader and what he kind of inspires from a team and you know, just that vibe around that person.
You know, like we've just seen Inventing Anna, right? She was just so driven about moving it, and it really came to
This close, right? We do have Kevin Brockland on the line. He's the managing partner at Indelible Ventures. Just before the break, we asked him about how can a startup tell if they're under or overestimated in their valuation. But Kevin, let's just say, like Frida said, there's a big oops. What are the consequences of miscalculating your valuation?
If you're way overestimating your valuation, you can end up turning off an investor where that can end a potential fundraising conversation, even if they're quite interested in investing into your business. A consequence of underestimating your valuation is that you could end up giving up too much of a percent of your company. That will result in larger amounts of dilution than you would necessarily otherwise take. This applies whether or not you're raising capital, whether you're allocating shares to employees or key hires or otherwise. It's important to understand what the value is so that you can avoid as much unnecessary dilution as feasible, because when it comes down to it, you're building a business and you're one of your most valuable assets in the business is your equity. And giving that away is something that you need to be very cautious about.
Right. So at the end of the day, Kevin, what does a venture capitalist or other investors look for when a startup presents the evaluation?
I think what I look for in it is first off, just making sure that it comes off as realistic. Generally speaking, the valuation gets presented pretty early on before the investor has really had a chance to dig in and do a substantial level of diligence on the company. So you haven't gotten to the point of really negotiating it as of yet. But if you're presenting how much you're looking to raise and what percent that you're giving up on your company, you're presenting a valuation there. And the first thing is just to make sure that it has some level of basis in reality. Most investors see a lot of different companies, so they have a preset understanding of what a valuation ought to be based upon your stage, your traction, and the characteristics that you've presented in the rest of your presentation. So assuming that it has all of that, you may end up advancing in conversations with that investor. And as you do, they'll start getting a little bit further into things like, have you established product market fit? What's your go-to-market strategy? What's the growth rate? They start digging into the product, the market size, all of these different characteristics that are the adjustment factors that can drive what your valuation is, because there's a lot of comparables out there, and those specific considerations as they start digging into it are what make the difference between are you average, below average, above average in regards to those comparables. And most investors will do multiple approaches in order to perform essentially like a sanity check, doing another methodology in order to verify that it comes in within the same range as adjusting against a comparable company.
And then how do you determine just exactly how much a startup needs to raise?
This is a really good question. I think it just boils down to a really solid understanding of what the strategy and plan are, depending upon the phase of development that the startup is at. There needs to be clear understanding of the phasing of the use of funds. A lot of times a startup will present a pie chart saying 20% for marketing, 40% for hires, so on and so forth. But when you really dig into it, you need to be able to have a plan in regards to saying, when are these hires going to end up happening? When are these expenses going to start increasing as we roll out a new marketing strategy, as we develop more distribution, as we execute on our product roadmap? You need to be able to understand those cost factors and how they trend over time so that you can look at that and understand how long of a financial runway do I need? Generally speaking, most investors would benchmark it and say, okay, we want a 18 to 24 month runway. They anticipate that you're going to go out and raise capital again prior to that, but it's built a little bit longer so that there's some buffer space so that you have some cushion in case exogenous factors or execution issues or otherwise. But generally speaking, you need to have a solid understanding of your strategy and execution and the costs associated with it, and then look at building out how long your runway ends up needing to be and how much cash that you actually need in order to facilitate reaching that point.
Right. With that in mind, how do you structure the fundraising process?
Structuring a fundraising process should be approached very similarly to the way that you structure a sales process. I think anybody that's in enterprise sales, B2B, those sort of categories is probably a little bit more familiar with structuring a sales process, where you're going through the process of identifying and qualifying leads and then going through the process of contacting those leads, and ultimately trying to close those leads. So when you're structuring the fundraising process, I think you need to approach it in the same a very methodical way as you would a sales funnel. You need to look at it and say, okay, what's the universe of investors out there? And then start narrowing those down based upon for which of those investors do you actually fit their investment thesis. If there's an investor that only writes $10 million checks and you're looking at raising $500,000, they're not going to be interested. Generally speaking, they won't go below their mandate. So you start narrowing it down. You'll come down to a subset of investors that invest at your size, that are invested in your space. You narrow it down based upon those considerations. Then you look at, okay, which of those investors do I actually want? Which are the ones that can bring me value add besides just the capital? And then you start narrowing it down again. Once you've narrowed down your target list, you want to then try and figure out, okay, who do I know anyone that could give me a warm introduction to one of these investors? Warm introductions work great because essentially it's a type of referral. Somebody that investor knows is introducing you, and it's an easier way in order to start those conversations. If you don't have one of those connectors that can introduce you, you'll have to figure out a way in order to cold connect. Cold connect may end up being a phone call, an email, getting with them on LinkedIn, social media, finding them at an event or otherwise. There's many different ways in order to get that first point of contact. And I think the main thing is that on that first point of contact, don't necessarily push the pitch immediately. Try and establish establish some rapport, try and establish some sort of conversation, and then move on from there as you start developing that. If you structure the fundraising process in a very methodical way, you'll find that what's normally a very time-consuming and difficult process will still be time-consuming and difficult, but it'll be substantially easier than it would have otherwise been if it was unstructured and haphazard.
That was great. Thanks so much, Kevin. Folks, that was Kevin Brockland. He is the managing partner over at Indelible Ventures. He's been on the line with us all the way through the show. Of course, we have been talking a little bit about how you value your startup. Interesting stuff.
And I was just thinking, right, at the end of the day, starting your business and looking at the fundamentals, your product, your service, what have you, I don't think you should be looking at funding as the main reason. You should be looking at your product, in developing that. And I tell you, investors will come knocking your door. I mean, this is an ideal situation, of course. If you start coming into business thinking about fundraising, I don't think, to me, that that's the right objective of getting into business.
But we're not those.
We're radio presenters and not with our own business.
Yes, that's correct. Now, it's almost time for me and Frida to wrap up, of course, but stick around because coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it's the Breakfast Grill replay. Asia Pacific University of Technology and Innovation, APU, has an iconic 500 million ringgit campus in Technology Park, Malaysia, but have students return back to campus? EY Entrepreneur of the Year, EOY 2021, Malaysia CEO of Asia Pacific University of Technology and Innovation, Datuk Paramjit Singh, is on the, or was on the Breakfast Grill to talk about the transformation of higher education and talks to sell APU for 1.5 billion ringgit. That's all coming up after the 1 o'clock news. To take us up there, of course, and we have been speaking about money, it's Depeche Mode with Just Can't Get Enough here on Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.